C4. Number 10B.
So she starts out by saying that the divine being must be reflected by man, and then shows those divine qualities like patience, gratitude, obedience, watchfulness, goodness. All these appear now in the second prayer, showing that actually praying means to express these qualities and not to ask for them, to reflect them and activate them. And among others, she puts quite a big accent on the quality of gratitude, that we should be grateful, and makes that terrific statement here already on page 3. Think of it, she has not yet gone very far in her presentation, and yet she says, if we are ungrateful for life, truth and love, and yet return thanks for all our blessings, we are insincere and incur the sharp censure our master pronounced on hypocrites. Isn't it terrific to see that she says, if you are grateful for the blessings received, but if you are not grateful for what? For life, truth and love. If you are not grateful for the nature of God as what He is, then you are insincere. Then you are a hypocrite. That should make one think about prayer. Because can you see that the whole theological prayer is all based on being grateful for the blessings received? We are in theology, prayers run like this, that we are grateful for a good day, that we are grateful that the family has been kept away from accidents and from catastrophes, that they are grateful that they were didn't become sick, that they had enough to eat, grateful for the meals and for everything and for a house and for not being, the farmer is grateful that the storm didn't come over his field but over the field of the neighbor, that he has not been touched by it. He's grateful for the material blessings. And she says, this is hypocrisy, because it's not blessing for the very thing that matters, namely for the very nature of God. If we are grateful that God is what He is, then naturally we have within our consciousness a great sense of being, and being always takes care of itself. It acts by itself and gives us the blessing that being wants to give. And you could say, well, how can we be grateful for life, truth and love on page 3 already, when we have only seen the prayer of mind? There you see how important it is to see the subtones of mind, which I have been telling you just a few minutes before, because in that subtone of mind you had the nature of life, truth and love to be grateful for, because she said in life God is pouring forth already more than what you accept. It says in truth that God is already doing right, you don't have to remind Him of it, and God's work is already fulfilled, and you have only to avail yourself of the rules. So why pray for something more than that abundance which you have not yet accepted? So it begins to make sense that already at that second prayer of spirit, she can rely back or refer back to the first prayer and say, if you take that in earnest, and if that is your true standpoint, your true inner mental standpoint, that you have accepted the fullness of life, the rightness of truth, and the fulfilled state of love, then you jolly well just can be grateful for that. Then you are not a hypocrite. Then you are grateful for the very thing that matters, namely the nature and the essence of God. The third subject and prayer is the prayer of reformation through cancellation of sin. Can you hear the tone of soul? Soul is that which handles sin, and it handles sin through cancelling sins by reformation. Soul reforms. And so here we have the prayer which says, look here, That is prayer when you are willing to cancel all that what is wrong. Not by asking that sin will be cancelled. You cancel it. That's prayer. Prayer is not asking God to forgive our sins. Prayer is to reform, and by reforming, cancelling sin. She takes up here a sense of speculating with God, that is sin, that if we speculate on God's goodness without that we are in earnest about it, without being sincere about it, this is a tone of soul, to be in earnest about it, to be sincere about it. But whereas theological prayer speculates on God's goodness and thinks that if we pray very fervently and with singing and with dancing and with sacrifices and meat offerings and drink offerings, as they used to do in the Old Testament, that God will be moved by that and then be very nice to us. Here it is quite different. It is not asking God to do something, but it's asking oneself to do something, namely to pay one's last farthing, really to be willing to change. That is prayer. The willingness to change is prayer already. Then she goes further and says in the fourth prayer, the prayer of principle, really, it's the prayer of honesty through correction. You can see a further step after Reformation. It is more or less giving that prayer of honesty where she says, you know, everything within you, not within God, within you, must be in accord with a principle attitude. What you say must be in accord with what you think, and what you think must be in accord with what you act, and the way you act, so that thoughts, acts, feelings, deeds, life, all have one common denominator, that it is principled. And if it's principled, then everything within us is whole, is consistent, coherent, and that's the prayer of principle. Again, it's not asking God something, it's asking ourselves, are we going to be in unity with principle? You see, the aim of prayer is always to be in unity with, to be in unity with mind. Therefore, have that desire which mind formulates in us, and not our desires. In spirit is to be one with spirit by reflecting spiritual qualities. In soul, to be one with sin by reforming until we are in line with sin, with soul, which is sinless. Here it is to be in line with principle by bringing everything into a principled attitude, no matter what it is, thoughts, words, feelings, life, deeds, and so on. Then we come to a very interesting prayer, the prayer of life. I summarized it as the prayer for wholeness through deep consecration. You see, life is deep consecration. You could also say it through deep devotion to the divine. That's life, that depth of life. You shall not take the word of the Lord in vain. See, that's the fifth statement of the commandments. See, if you have the tonality of the commandments, the days of creation and the Beatitudes and the Lord's Prayer, you are helped enormously in finding the tonality in the textbook, because these attitudes recur and recur also in the textbook. Here you have not to take the word of the Lord in vain, not superficially. It must be a deep consecration, a deep devotion, in order that this attitude has a healing effect. She speaks here very much about how can the healings be achieved, and depicts that inner attitude and says, gives both sides. Do you think your healing will be achieved by superficiality of your inner attitude, namely just through blind faith, just through blind belief, just through vain repetitions, or by unceasing prayers, or by petitions, all that you will call superficiality. And the depth of it, the depth of prayer, is different. She demands their deep conviction, fervent desire. It's not just desire. Here it is now, fervent desire. Can you hear the devotion, the consecration, fervent desire? She speaks here of the deep and conscientious protests of truth, of the deep and conscious protests of man's unity with God. Can you see? We have seen prayer is really that, to have that deep, conscientious protest of man's actual unity with God. As if that would be the starting point for the whole textbook, that we go out from an established unity with God. It's here that she shows really how also superficial prayer can do something, just as a belief in medicine can heal, and that the belief in drugs is the same belief as the belief in God. Therefore, both can heal and both cannot heal, just according to how deeply you are interested in that belief and believe in the belief. But she says this is really not prayer. Prayer is the inner deep affirmation of man's unity with God. Then we come to the sixth prayer of truth, the prayer of truth, where she says that it is a prayer of spiritual consciousness through the affirmation of spiritual facts. It is all that part where she speaks that we should go into the closet, shut the door, affirm what is within the sanctuary of spirit, actually deny all that is not in accordance to truth, and deny that, so that only we affirm within consciousness the consciousness of the facts of being. So it's affirmation of the spiritual facts, it's denying error, so that in consciousness we only have one thing, namely our unity with truth. That's prayer. Do you see again? I just repeat it endlessly until you get tired of it, but that perhaps it may sink in. Desire, a prayer is not praying for a blessing. Prayer is an inward attitude, an inner meditation, an inner pondering of what? Of man's unity with God. That's prayer. Acknowledging that we are one with God, that God's nature is within us and not something that is outside of us, and that we would like to call it down. In the last prayer, the prayer of love, it's a prayer for deliverance. But through what? Through holiness. Love is holiness. That's an idea of love. And therefore she presents here that true deliverance, true freedom we gain through accepting already the state of holiness within us. Here she asks us, so to say, to rejoice in what is known to God. See, not to ask something from God, but to rejoice, really, in that what God knows, and God knows already his own perfection. She speaks about the heaven-born aspiration, no more the human-born aspiration, no more the earth-born aspiration. Prayer is not an aspiration to go up into heaven. Prayer is the heaven-born aspiration, namely the aspiration to go out from holiness and see the whole world, the whole universe as perfect. That's prayer. To go out from perfection. Can we see how the whole textbook starts there, where we have left the wrong system of reference, the worldly system of reference, the human system of reference right behind us. We are not, the textbook doesn't start there where it tries to bring us first to the point of showing that the human system of reference is wrong, but it starts on that high level where we have left the human system of reference behind and say, let's start out right from man's unity with God and from the affirmation of man's unity with God, the affirmation of the holiness of our state of being. And look out from that point of view and see how the human system of reference is just nothing. So, in this way one can see that she does not present metaphysics that would try to bring us up and out of the material, but that actually our standpoint is right from the beginning, the science of being, the standpoint of science. Yes. So these are the seven great tones. So you see, if we just go over it and perhaps meditate a little bit over those seven prayers, I run through them again, but not in the terms that you have it written down, but just try to get the flow of it. What you would say here is that prayer is a spiritual understanding of Him. Therefore, it must be an understanding of the whole nature of God. That's prayer, to understand God. It's a terrific prayer. It has nothing to do with praying that I have enough income, that I have no lack, that I'm healthy, that I will get healthy, that I will be freed from a difficult situation. All the prayer there is really here, that prayer to be one with God and affirm that oneness, spiritual understanding of the nature of God. How do we do that? And the prayer of wisdom says, well, you have to open up your whole mentality, that's wisdom, that you open up yourself unreservedly to the allness of mind, to the allness of God. And so Mrs. Eddy would show the allness of God in its nature, in its sevenfold nature. In the other subtones of the other prayers, she doesn't do that. It's only in mind that she does that. She gives us a true starting point and say, if you don't know the nature of God, all the rest is built on sand. So she shows us here how to open up thought to the allness of mind and then depicts the nature of the allness of mind through the seven synonymous term. That mind knows all, that mind as spirit has all substance, that mind as soul is unchangeable, that mind as principle is an unchangeable scientific principle of being, that mind as life pours down infinite blessing, that mind as truth is already doing right, that mind as love has already a fulfilled activity and fulfilled work, and that's the starting point from which we can go right out. So often, when I sit down and perhaps have to think about the situation, I say, well, how can I think about the situation? I jolly well have to pray. That reminds me, just as I say that, so often the students come to me and say, can you tell me how I should act in this situation? Could you tell me what I should study next? Could you tell me, should I teach this and that? Could you tell me what I should read? Could you tell me? 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 And the very first thing one learns in Christian Science is prayer. And prayer says, go to mind. No person knows what is right for anybody. If somebody comes to me and says, should I read this book or should I give this talk or should I do this? I say, well, I can't do anything else but what you can do, namely, first pray. If somebody thinks I know it, then they think I'm God Almighty. And I'm not. I'm not. Mind is God, not me. And I can't take an answer from anywhere else but from mind. And mind is individualized and therefore gives the answer to each one, to the one who needs it. To the one who needs it. Therefore, I think generally we should see that if people ask us what to do, Mrs. Eddy Neighbor gave an answer. She always said, if I give you an answer, then you go and do it the way I say, and then it's wrong for you because you are an individual. It's not right for you if I tell you what I would do, because my being is individual. Therefore, all what we can do, if somebody asks us, what shall I do, and shall I do this, shall I do that, what do you think about this, the only thing we can tell them is to show how to pray and let them wait for the answer. Isn't that nice? That actually everyone, if he knows how to pray, knows where to go in order to find an answer. That he goes to the divine mind. And in the stillness of one's thought, one always hears mind speak. Always. Sometimes one has to be a bit patient, but it always speaks. Because that's the nature of mind. That's the very thing you have on the first page of the textbook, that mind knows all thoughts, all unspoken thoughts, but that mind will also give us the true desire, will mold our thought. So it's mind, it doesn't say Max. You know, on that first page it doesn't say Max knows it, you know. It doesn't say that. It says the divine mind knows it. So we have to go to the right authority. And the answer mind gives is that which is individually adapted to the student and therefore absolutely measured to his individual mission. It's tailor-made, so to say. Absolutely adapted to his individuality. The only thing, we must trust it. We must trust it. And how can we trust it? It says in the prayer of spirit, well, be grateful. Gratitude. Gratitude for God, that God is what he is. Be grateful for God to be mind. Be grateful for God to be mind, that mind informs us. So, the third prayer says, therefore correct first your attitude, the prayer of correction, so that we see we have to correct our attitude and see that that attitude is not sinful, that it is sinless, which means it's right to the target, it hits the mark, namely it is identified with the nature of God, then it is sinless. And so the prayer of principle, which demands obedience to principle, says, all right, I bring everything into accord with that principle, my thoughts, my desires, my longings, my wishes, my aims, everything I bring into accord with principle, and said, I only really want to do what principle wants me to do. I only want to be guided the way principle guides me. And then somehow comes the fifth that says, you must be in earnest about it, not to give in. Be deeply devoted to that very thing. Somebody asked me the other day, what shall I do to be successful in studying this science, to make the grade, so to say, in this science? I said, well, I have really only one answer, that's the key to everything, absolute dedication. I said, I can't tell you what to study next and what is the best way of study and tell you for a few years, first study this and then study that and study the other, because without dedication you can do whatever you like and you never arrive. It's dedication that makes the great. That deep dedication. That deep dedication is followed by the prayer of truth, where we stand guard at the door of our holiness and closet, and where we shut the door towards all the arguments and all the suggestions that would like to rob us of the success, and affirm within ourselves very definitely what is true and what is in unity with God, and that man is in unity with God. So that finally in the prayer of love, we look out from love and see from love already all what is known to God, though unknown to the world. It's unknown to the world, but it's known to God. So we turn away definitely from the human system of reference and know what God knows. Yes. The chapter on prayer teaches us also another important point which theology doesn't see. If you go around the bookstore and look what is written there, perhaps you find a terrific thick book on prayers. If one opens it, one finds a collection of a few hundred prayers. Is that Mrs. Eddy's concept, that we have a few thousand different prayers? And she says, no, there is only one prayer. And that Jesus taught only one prayer, and not a thousand prayers. What is that one prayer of which Jesus speaks? It is, deliver us from the evil one, not from the many evils. It says, deliver us from the evil one. And she says, the evil one is but another name for the first lie and all liars. So there is a first lie, and from that first lie, from that comes all the lies. What then is that first lie, which may be covered by the one prayer? And then Mrs. Eddy gives the Lord's Prayer, which covers all human needs. So she gives one prayer for all human needs. Isn't it interesting? One prayer for all the human needs. And therefore we can see, in giving that Lord's Prayer in the 7, we can see what Mrs. Eddy meant is that there is only one prayer, namely that prayer of spiritual understanding of God, that unselfed love. Therefore, if we have an inner unity with mind, with spirit, with soul, with principle, life, truth, and love, and affirm that inner unity right from the beginning, that's the one prayer. There are no other prayers. No prayers for better job, no prayers for more income, no prayers for this and that and the other. It's the one prayer for our unity with God. So fundamentally, I think what we should see, if we bring it right back to the synonymous terms, that we could see that there is only one mind, so that only the mind in us can be one with the divine mind, and therefore only that one mind is really pouring out all the blessings of mind. And if you do that through the 7 synonymous term, then you have that, what I have written in the little booklet on the spiritual principle of prayer.